Welcome in to another edition of the Daily Tap. It is Monday, March 19th, and the longest 4 days of the year begin. Yes, no college basketball. We have to wait now until Thursday night for the Sweet 16 in what has been described as maybe one of the crazier tournaments in quite some time. Usually the chalk ends up, playing out, but it's been wild. We're going to talk winners and losers to start the pod, then look at the Bucks, and then talk a little bit about the Packers and their secondary situation. You guys know where to find us, SnowTapWI, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well as our website, SnowTapWI. Subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, the whole deal. Do it wherever you feel comfortable with. Excited to talk to you guys. I thought the first 4 days were great. I thought it was high entertainment, high value, and definitely excited for the rest of this tournament. I think it is sort of up for grabs. I think it's anyone's tournament at this point. I think right side of the bracket is far superior to the left side. It'll be interesting to see how that all shapes out. But let's the winners and losers of this tournament. Number one, I have to say Kentucky. So over UMBC, who we're going to talk about here in a second, it has to be Kentucky. Kentucky looked like they were going to get a pretty tough draw. They were looking like they were going to have to play Arizona and DeAndre Ayton in the second round. Then they looked like they had Virginia in the Sweet 16. And I would say Tennessee or Cincinnati matchup in the second round or in the Elite Eight would have been fine for Kentucky. But instead, the Wildcats got a 12 seed, a 13, a 9, and then they'll play the winner of an 11 or a 7 to get to the Final Four. Kentucky has it tailor-made to get there. Sometimes that's the hardest thing to do, though. Sometimes that is the – Kentucky sees it. Kentucky's fans are already booking their trip to San Antonio. But you have to win. You have to finish. That sometimes is the hardest thing to do. And with a young team like Kentucky, you could see that having a problem. Although it looks like Kentucky has really figured it out. You know, Gildas Alexander is a hell of a player. Witten Gabriel's also very good for the Cats. I think Kentucky, the sky's the limit for this team. And, you know, they're just putting together all at the right time. I feel foolish for not riding Kentucky. I think I mentioned that on one of the podcasts this weekend. I was about Kentucky heading into the tournament and then sort of backed off. I got all my Arizona business, and that's what led me to not ride with the Cats. I'm foolish for not doing it, and I'm sure the city of Atlanta is thanking God that Kentucky's there with the likes of Nevada, Loyola, Chicago, and Kansas State all being there, not necessarily basketball powerhouses. Atlanta at least gets Kentucky. So I would be stunned if Phillips Arena isn't filled with Cats fans. So Kentucky should have a home court advantage as well. I think they have no problem taking out Kansas State. And I do think the Cinderella matchup between Loyola and Nevada is interesting. You know, it could be the first time in a long time we've had a true Cinderella in the Final Four. Loyola, I would say, is more of that. The Loyola-Nevada game is going to be awesome. Like, I hope you guys realize, like, how good that Loyola-Nevada game is going to be. Because both those teams, all they do is shoot the basketball. All they do is shoot three. And Nevada has become these comeback kids of sorts, you know, coming back from 14 down in round one in the second half, coming down from 22 in round two. Eric Musselman has some of the best, like, just coaching mannerisms that we've seen in this tournament. He's great. You have to like Nevada. You just have to. I realize Loyola has Sister Jean. I realize there's a lot of Loyola love, but definitely the second winner are the Cinderellas of this, and the low seeds that got in. Such a big weekend for those. UMBC, we talked about it on Saturday. They're going to be a talking today. I mean, UMBC lost, and they didn't really play that well, kind of ran out of gas. But they are going to be the talk of today. They're going to be the talk of the next couple of weeks. I'm sure Ryan Odom will make his rounds on TV and radio for the next few days. UMBC is the story because they are the first 16 seed to beat a 1 in men's basketball. It's never happened. Who knows when it's going to happen again. And it's going to be the biggest story. I mean, it'll be the story of the tournament. It's not going to – someone said I think I saw the quote, like, you're going to – you won't really remember the Final Four, but you're always going to remember UMBC. And that's true. I'll know where I was. I know I had a girlfriend sleeping next to me, and I'm watching this thinking, I cannot believe this is happening, talking in a group shot and going nuts about it. So there's that. So, yes, big day, big time week for the low seeds. Florida State going in, Kansas State, Texas A&M. I mean, there's a lot of teams. I mean, granted, a team like Texas A&M, I feel like, is one of those low seeds that underperformed all year, and now they're kind of getting their chance to shine. Like, Texas A&M, at the beginning of the year, they were like a top 10, top 5 team. People talked about them as a Final Four team. So if Texas A&M somehow gets there, I don't think that's really a surprise. They just finally put it together all at the right time. And so that's interesting. You know, you do kind of wonder, you know, could you reseed the tournament? Because, I mean, let's be real. Duke and Villanova have looked like the best teams in this tournament. They're on the same side of the bracket. Duke's been fantastic. They demolished Iona and Rhode Island. Villanova demolished their 16 seed. Then people thought maybe Alabama would trip them up. We assaulted them from three. Now they have a very interesting matchup with West Virginia. That Villanova-West Virginia game is great. We're going to probably rank the games as we did this weekend. Same thing we're going to do next weekend and look at. I think this is a really good Sweet 16. I don't think this is a bad Sweet 16. There's some matchups that are non-traditional, shall we say, but they're all worth watching. And so, yes, I think Duke and Villanova are the best two teams. I think Kansas is kind of getting slept on just because no one's really talking about it. Everyone kind of assumes that's Duke's bracket. Kansas gets the home court kind of with Omaha. Don't sleep on Kansas. Kansas is not really getting a lot of love, and if Bill Self somehow gets his way into the Final Four, I don't think we should be surprised. I mean, we're setting up for a Duke-Kansas Sunday afternoon soiree, and I think that's what we're all looking for. Losers, the NCAA tournament committee takes a big ass out. They are easily the biggest losers because too many upsets likely equal a bad bracket, right? I think that is common knowledge that if you put together this bracket, you didn't really plan for all these upsets. You planned for it to go chalk or a few upsets here and there, but at the end of the day, you're providing the best possible matchups, and yet you set your bracket up for failure. And it's interesting. It's interesting that this sort of thing happens every now and again. But it's clear that, you know, Xavier might not have been the best of one seeds. That probably should have belonged to Duke, not Xavier. You look at Michigan State, who is probably one of the more talented teams. I think Michigan State's the only one who really collapsed. But you look at that whole side of the bracket with the Cincinnati, Tennessees of the world. North Carolina falling completely apart and showing that they were not even close to being worth a two seed. And yeah, I think that especially in the South, the bracket was not well done. And I said this on Saturday. You could go back and listen to it. You know, UMBC was the top ranked 16 seed, and they probably should have faced Xavier. They probably shouldn't have faced Virginia. They probably should have faced Xavier. So Virginia, I think, has a legitimate claim. And I do think what happened with Virginia was more of just a choke job. But yes, now you have the likes of Kansas State and other teams in there. You hate to be a wet blanket about it. I'm not trying to be a wet blanket. I'm just saying, you know, it takes some of the air out of the excitement. I think anytime you could have had Duke Michigan State as a Sweet 16 game would have been fantastic, but now you get Duke Syracuse, and Syracuse just plays boring brand basketball. I have some friends who are Syracuse fans. Shout out to Kramer, shout out to Shannon. But man, this just makes me my head want to explode. Especially Michigan State, man, definitely a big loser. They weren't considered, but Michigan State should have at least been a Sweet 16 team with the talent they had. City of Cincinnati, two epic meltdowns. Cincinnati's was way worse than Xavier's. Cincinnati having a 22-point lead only to let it go in the final 7 minutes against a Nevada team who looked kind of dead in the water, and yet they responded, heard the bell, and got the job done. Xavier had a 14-point lead heading into the last 10 minutes. They could not close out Florida State, and just, oh man, hate to be from Cincinnati. I mean, Cincinnati and Xavier fans hate each other, but one thing they can agree, both teams fucked up a chance to go to the Sweet 16. Pretty good. Big East also takes it out. So close to having three teams in. Butler nearly gets in. Xavier nearly gets in. And yet, Butler's case, they came all the way back and nearly beat Purdue. Xavier should have been there. Now it's just Villanova like it always is, and they carry the flag for the Big East. Moving on to the pro circuit. So the Bucks did win this weekend. We didn't have a podcast Sunday. I didn't, you know what? It was one of those things where I had the girlfriend over early, didn't really want to tape once already the games had got started. I was like, yeah, just the impact really isn't there. So the so I would have talked about the Bucks. So we'll talk about the Bucks today because they have a big matchup with Cleveland tonight. And they don't really inspire much confidence right now. I think when the Bucks were, you know, what they had happen in Orlando and I cussed them out and just F-bombed them up and down, you expect kind of a statement to be done against an Atlanta team that's not very good at all. And yet the Bucks did the opposite. The Bucks let Atlanta hang in this game. Torian Prince had 38 points. I mean, they were right in it at the end and the Bucks pulled it out, thank God. But they easily could have lost that game to the Hawks, and that doesn't really just inspire confidence heading into a week where you play Cleveland, and you kind of need to keep winning games. Like, you'd want to avoid that 8 seed, you want to avoid that 7 seed. It's looking more and more likely that's what's going to happen. But the Bucks did not necessarily look like they were on their game. Giannis played. I mean, guys played well, but they weren't playing defense at all. They just didn't care. I mean, they were letting Schroeder and Prince do whatever the fuck they wanted out there, and I think that's the frustrating part. This Cavs Bucks game could be first to 130. When's this game? We do need to see Jabari more minutes. He had 15 points in 21 minutes. You have to let Jabari play 30 minutes. I don't know when he's getting let loose. Maybe they're waiting until April. I'm not sure. But Jabari looks more than ready to be a leader on this team. And I think the Bucks really need to allow them to do that, because the only way they're, I think, going to succeed the rest of the year is letting Jabari play a full workload. Thon and Snell had some of their better games, I think, in past weeks. You know, Snell had 11 points, Thon had 8, and Thon hit a couple big threes. So, but Milwaukee still needs to, a fire needs to be lit under their ass. I don't know what it's going to take, but it definitely needs to happen here soon, because they're running out of time. And then at some point you're going to wonder, okay, where did this all go? We had a chance, and now we're going to be a 7th seed and get swept out of playoffs by Boston, because that literally could happen. And the Bucks just, it's hard to say really what's wrong. You can't pinpoint. And I didn't know if I want to talk about this, but since I'm kind of flowing, Chris Middleton had some really interesting comments to Bill Michaels on the Milwaukee Basketball Hour, basically saying, yeah, I kind of need the ball more, and we can't be shooting threes. He's been infected by Jason Kidd. He has Jason Kidd's disease. He's carrying Jason Kidd's philosophies with him, and yet no one's told him that that is not the way to play basketball. And Chris Middleton thinks he's a star, and he's just not. And I think the rubber has met the road with Chris Middleton. I don't think Chris Middleton has a spot on this Bucks team next season. It's not because I don't like Chris Middleton. It's just that I think he's outgrown the role that the Bucks need him to play. The Bucks do not need him to play sort of this secondary star to Giannis, because he's not an all-star. He's a guy. He's a Mitch Richmond. He's a guy who needs to be on a bad team where he can just shoot all he wants, and the Bucks can get some real talent for him, and I really think they can. So we'll see. Keep an eye on that one, but I'm pretty much out on the idea of Middleton being the secondary guy for the Bucks. So yes, we'll definitely dive into Bucks Cavs tomorrow night. Will the Packers sign a corner is my third topic. It's a great question, right? You don't want to talk to yourself, but they're running out of options. They tried this Kyle Fuller thing. I thought it was creative. I didn't think there was anything wrong with making a move at a guy who the Packers probably weren't going to get, but they were just trying to stroke the flames, trying to drive up the price for the Bears. Definitely sort of a, hey, there's a new sheriff in town. That's fine. Honey Badger, he didn't want to come to Green Bay. He wanted to come to Houston. He has family in Louisiana. It's really not that hard to see, but simple-headed fucking Packer fans are going to be all mad. So what's left? Packers already did a good job breaking it all down. I agree with Zach Krause that EJ Gaines is probably the best option left, but he's 5'10", which doesn't fit the Packers' mold. He also gets hurt a lot. But Gaines would be a guy to bring in. I don't want anything to do with Terrell Revis. I know some fans might bring that up, given that he was in Mike Patton's system, just like Mohammed Wilkerson. Revis doesn't give a shit, man. He's cashing checks at this point. Unless Patton thinks that he could turn around Revis's career, I highly doubt it. Devin Bruss is a guy who I'm interested in. I think he has some injury concerns, but he's a decent body. DRC, I can't, I don't, I would not expect him to be there. He's not the type of guy I think the Packers are looking to bring in. Tremont Williams, I've pushed that a couple times. I think that is the way to go, but I can't see Tremont Williams being the only guy. The Packers don't have much left. We'll see what they do. I think these next 2 days are very interesting for Green Bay when it comes to a corner, because they have to make some sort of deal, and if they don't, man, God. I really don't know what's going to happen. And it's kind of like, here we go again, unless they're trying to work out a trade before the draft starts. All right. We shall talk tomorrow, Tappers. Tapping the Keg will be taped Tuesday. We'll talk tomorrow about Bucks, Cavs, and who knows what else. So you guys have yourself a good Monday, and we'll talk tomorrow. Take care. Snow Tap WI, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Take care. Have a good one. We'll talk tomorrow. See ya.